Menards is the ultimate home improvement destination in the Midwest. Since 1958, we've been supplying you with everything from hardware to automotive needs. We believe in helping you save big money on every project, big or small. From top-of-the-line tools to plumbing supplies, paint, and appliances, we've got you covered. We thank you for making Menards a part of your year. From our family to yours, have a safe and happy new year.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel, where it is time once again for Second Helping, the show of choice for fans and followers of the number one league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference. I'm Travis Ryer, alongside my great friend, longtime co-host, Mr. Brent Beard, college football analyst, most recently for First Coast News in Jacksonville, Florida. Brent, also a voter for the most prestigious individual honor in collegiate athletics, the Heisman Trophy. And Brent, we're going to talk some Tennessee football coming up here in just a little bit, because the Vols are fresh off a heartbreaking last-second loss to Brett Bielema and the Illini of Illinois. We'll talk about that. We'll obviously preview the college football playoff, the quarterfinals coming up involving three SEC teams. Only two can advance, though. We have a rematch of Ole Miss Georgia, of course, down in the Sugar Bowl, and Alabama out in the Rose Bowl taking on Indiana. But Brent, wanted to start with the SEC performance in bowl games to this point. We'll start really with Tennessee, because we just saw the events unfold there in Nashville. And for Tennessee, I think Tennessee and Missouri basically had the same seasons when I really think about Missouri falling in the Gator Bowl a couple of nights ago to Virginia. Your thoughts on what we've kind of seen to this point?
It has not been real good. Tonight was an example of that. Tennessee, frankly, it was an entertaining game going back and forth. The problem is for Tennessee, as it is with a lot of teams, a lot of opt-outs in the game. Jared McCoy at cornerback, Chris Basil at wide receiver, that would have really helped them tonight. Arian Carter, linebacker, Colton Hood, cornerback, and also Joshua Joseph. So, Trav, to that point, Tough loss for Tennessee in many ways. I mean, look, I give Illinois credit, and that their coach, who people forget, was at Arkansas at one point and has won back-to-back bowl games against Arkansas and now Tennessee.
Yeah, he has. Brett Bielema doing a nice job up there in Champaign. And sticking mostly with the SEC side of this with Tennessee. But, boy, at the end of the day, Tennessee didn't beat anybody this year. No. I mean, not anyone of significance, right? No. Lost to Georgia in heartbreaking fashion earlier in the season. Lost to Alabama. I guess Florida is the sort of the saving grace maybe of this season. But an empty season in a lot of ways. Now, you do give credit to that staff, especially on the offensive side of the ball, because of the quarterback interchange that you had there. Joey Aguilar, for the most part, did a pretty good job, I thought, for Tennessee this season. But the defense definitely took a step back. We've seen that addressed already in terms of the staff changes that are coming on that side of the football. So there is optimism for sort of a springboard in some ways. I think it's got to involve a talent infusion or a developmental infusion that I'm not entirely aware of as of yet. But Missouri, the same thing. Yeah. I mean, Missouri didn't beat anybody either.
No.
And when you look at what Eli Drinkwitz continues to do at Missouri, I think in a lot of ways you want to give him credit. But at the end of the day, the guy didn't beat anybody. I think I saw a stat the other day for Missouri where they didn't beat a team this year that had even a 6-6 record, you know, and Drake ends up in the conversation for jobs at Penn State and Florida and gets raises and extensions. Really. Hey, good for Eli Drinkwitz, but boy, not much at the end of the day for hollow seasons, both in Columbia, Missouri and in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yeah. And Trav, if I'm not mistaken, Missouri started off, 5-0.
Well, and we anticipated that because of that schedule, and then really had a chance to make an impact with that home game against Alabama.
Yeah, no question.
And had chances to win that game. Give Alabama credit. Went on the road, tough environment, got the job done. But that was sort of the first game we were looking at on that schedule where we were going to say, okay, you know, maybe Missouri's legit. And didn't really beat anybody all year.
No, they really didn't. And now I guess in fairness to them, that they were, I mean, the last play of the game, in that they had a chance to win. They had their the third string quarterback in there. And frankly, the guy threw a pretty good pass to the end zone. It just wasn't caught. But as far as Tennessee is concerned, Trev, I'm just wondering, did their season start spiraling after that loss to Georgia in a game to where they basically were lined up, correct me here, but weren't they lined up for the winning field goal and the thing went to the right of the crossbar?
Yeah, they had chances. The game never should have come down to that against Georgia.
No.
Really. The explosive start really put a foot on Georgia's throat early there at Neyland Stadium and wasn't able to finish the job. And it sort of was a springboard in some ways for Georgia. Georgia then would go on to lose at home to Alabama. But, you know, the steadiness of Georgia, as we'll talk about coming up in that preview with Ole Miss. I think where Tennessee's season started to really go away from the Vols and Josh Heupel was the last play of the first half in Tuscaloosa.
Yes.
Xavier Brown pick six.
Yes.
That he takes back 99 yards, where Tennessee looked like it was in very good shape going into halftime at Bryant-Denny Stadium. I think you could point at that play too.
Well, look, the defensive side of the ball really struggled toward the end, particularly in the bowl game with the opt-outs. We mentioned five or six opt-outs. And Trav, only one of them was an offensive player. The rest of them, McCoy, Carter, Hood, and Joseph were defensive players that certainly hurt them. Now, I understand, you may have heard more on this, that they might be in the mix for quarterback Anthony Calandria from UNLV. He's supposed to get a lot of attention. So we'll kind of see where that goes. But, yes, to your point, incredibly disappointing season for Missouri and the Vols.
Now, Joey Aguilar was in that lawsuit, right, that involved Diego Pavia and the JUCO guys trying to get that extra year. Is there anything perhaps that could come of that?
I guess at this point, we'll just say possibly that's a very good point. We're not real sure about that. Is a possibility. And I tell you another thing that we need to mention. Rodney Gardner, the Tennessee position coach, he is not under contract next year. So does he leave or do they keep him under Jim Knowles? Now that's one thing we haven't talked about. I'll mention that real quick. Obviously, Jim Knowles, reputable D coordinator who is at Ohio State and Penn State, coming to Tennessee. So these defensive issues may be taken care of, but needless to say, we'll get into this later. Next year, an important transition year for the Vols.
Yeah, revered, renowned as an all-timer, as a position coach, Rodney Gardner, but the sands on the coaching hourglass have got to be becoming thinner and thinner, I would think, where Rodney Gardner is concerned. Yeah. So you're right. The quarterback position is where all eyes will be on Tennessee. I don't think you can at this point, even if there is a grain of hope where Joey Aguilar is concerned, you can't plan that way.
No.
You know what I mean? You got to. And they've signed guys like George McIntyre in the last year or so out of the high school ranks. Can he develop and become that sort of guy? But, yeah, a lot of possibilities. And this is an offense still very attractive, I think.
Yeah, it is.
To a portal quarterback. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure it's the best offense for a NFL prospect.
No.
But I don't think that really matters in this day and age. Mm-hmm. If you go out and offer a quarterback a couple $3 million now in the NIL era, that can get plenty of really, really good system-type guys. Tempo, you're going to want a guy that's, you know, like Aguilar had spent time in tempo and, you know, a similar type of approach. I'm sure, if you are Heupel. Chad Shoemake chiming in here in the live show chat. Hey, Chad, how you doing? Hanging Chad, we'll call him. He's hanging out with us. Hanging out with us live on a Tuesday night, and we're going to get into some of those games coming up tomorrow, the 31st. These used to be the New Year's Day sort of hair of the dog games, I called them, Brent, after a maybe late night, New Year's Eve.
Yes,
you would roll out of the rack or maybe just roll over in the rack and flick on the game from Tampa. And this time around, by the way, I traveled today from Milwaukee to Nashville to Northeast Florida. It was a fun day in the airports because you saw all these different fan bases. I mean, in Milwaukee, I even saw Bama people and Indiana people making their way out west. And certainly when I got to Nashville, when I got to B&A, I saw a lot of black and gold jumping on one of those Southwest flights headed towards Tampa. And so it will be Vanderbilt. And what figures to be Diego Pavia's swan song as the Commodores quarterback taking on the 23rd ranked Iowa Hawkeyes. You talked about it earlier with opt-outs and how much of that you have to take into account in games like this. I think obviously for Vanderbilt, when you talk about the opt-out situation, you know, you're talking first and foremost Eli Stowers at the tight end position. Otherwise, looking at Iowa, Iowa's kind of like an academy. You know, even though they're not an academy, whatever you think about their sort of antiquated approach to offensive football throughout the years, and is Kirk Ferentz going to be there in perpetuity? They don't have a lot of opt-outs. I mean, they have a culture there at Iowa that shows up and helps them in this type of era, especially where bowl games are concerned.
They absolutely do. And they got a legendary coach in Kirk Ferentz too. That's incredible. A little bit of Vanderbilt news, their quarterback coach, Garrett Altman, Arkansas State is hiring Vandy quarterback coach Altman. So that will be interesting. Now, I understand Diego Pavia also lended a hand in getting five-star quarterback Jared Curtis, top recruit, and Vandy hit one of the top recruits in Vandy history, and that stuff will follow as it goes along. And Trev, we mentioned this a minute ago, talking about the Vols, and you put easily one of Vanderbilt's better wins this year over Tennessee. So, and look, again, this is a Vanderbilt team that really had an argument, or at least to get a sniff for the playoffs. They couldn't quite do that. Then they were number 14, needed to be higher. But I still give this Vanderbilt coaching staff, Diego Pavia, credit for putting them back on the map.
Yeah, you can look at games like this and say, you know, what is there really to play for? Well, for Vanderbilt, you're playing for 11 wins.
Sure you are.
Hey, you don't, as a Vanderbilt fan, sort of just assume that another one of these is coming down the pike. I don't care if you sign Jared Curtis at quarterback or not.
Yeah.
An 11-win season for Vanderbilt, perhaps. I think you're going to get the best Diego Pavia. You know you're typically going to get that from him. I was a little concerned about Diego in Tampa for me for an extended stretch. It looks like he's going to make it to game day, though, and in one piece. And, you know, Iowa's not going to trick you, man. I mean, you kind of know what you're going to get. Typically, you're going to get really good defensive football. Mm-hmm. You're going to get good offensive line play, and you're going to get a grinder. And I think that's what this game's going to be tomorrow. Yeah. I think Vanderbilt is a 5.5-point favorite. It's probably about right. But, you know, Iowa, nothing flashy, as we know. It'll be interesting to see how Vanderbilt deals with, you know, just that disciplined approach. Vanderbilt's been that way in its own right in a lot of ways, Brent. So I'm going to go with the Commodores. I think it's going to be close. Yeah. I think it's going to be something like a 23-17 game, 20-14 type of game.
Yeah, and they're pretty disciplined. I give that coaching staff some credit for that. And, you know, Pavia really wants to win, to go out on a high note. Yep. And what a difference that he has made But again, and we've got all offseason talk about this, but it's going to be fascinating to see how this coaching staff takes the momentum from this year and a historic year for Vanderbilt into the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, and you know, we talk about Stowers opting out of the game, and they are anything but sort of a one-trick pony in the passing game when it comes to, you know, the different guys that have been very impactful for them. I mean, between Trey Richardson, Junior Sherrill, a couple of guys that have combined for 13 touchdown receptions this year. Cole Spence, they're not just a one tight end team either. No. Cole Spence has really emerged or semi-emerged nicely this season with two touchdown catches, 202 receiving yards. Big yards per catch, guys, in this Vanderbilt offense. And so can they run it well enough? I think the run game is where that starts for them. And so can they run it well enough with sort of that myriad of options that they have between Pavia and the running back spots to really, really cash in on the passing game, the explosiveness in the passing game that we have seen from Vanderbilt, especially in 2025. Also, tomorrow we're going to get Michigan and Texas. In Orlando, Texas is a 7-point favorite. Another game where opt-outs are big, both sides. I almost consider this one a wash. I mean, when you look at it from the Texas perspective and you see Malik Muhammad and Jalen Gilbo and Michael Taff, that's three defensive backs right there who have opted out in favor of getting a jump on the NFL draft. Anthony Hill Jr., big-time linebacker. So more so than even with Trey Wisner out and DeAndre Moore out on the offensive side, boy, the back end of that Texas defense really going to be something to keep an eye on. The question is, can this Michigan offense, even with Bryce Underwood, do enough throwing the football and in the passing game to kind of cash in on that?
Yeah, and you were talking about groups of players. Boy, the running backs are thin, Trev, are they not, at this point, particularly with Texas, Q Wisner, C.J. Baxter, among the guys that are opting out. I mean, you understand that, but these guys had some big games this year. That certainly is going to hurt in a lot of ways. Trev, I'm curious your thoughts on Arch. Now, Arch Manning has said he's coming back. Give him credit for that. He will be starting his 15th game coming up this week. 252 yards a game, 62% completions, touchdown to interception ratio that you and I look at for a long time, 38-9. I think that's pretty solid. 11-3, and look, Trav, if they would have won one more of these games, particularly maybe the Ohio State game, where would Ohio State be right now in terms of the playoffs? I wonder.
Yeah, that would be interesting because if you had a, let's say, even a 10-2 Texas with that head-to-head over a, I guess, an 11-2 Ohio State team, it would have been if Ohio State had gone into conference play, run the table, lost to Indiana in the Big Ten championship, certainly would have been a big debate. Where would Miami be? You know, maybe where would Alabama be? It might be a better question than even that. So, yeah, I mean, again, Michigan's missing some guys too. Key pass rusher for Michigan and Derek Moore is out due to the NFL draft. Really, a couple of their top edge guys, pass rusher types, are going to be out. Justice Haynes has been out for an extended stretch. The Alabama transfer who had done some really good things. It's your point in terms of even running back production in this game, I think, is going to be tough to come by. A couple of quarterbacks, man, that everybody had to have, too.
That's right.
Bryce Wood and Arch Manning. So we'll see. I'll go with Texas in the game. I just don't think Michigan is built in a way to be able to capitalize on the absences on the defensive side. Texas.
Agree totally. And one of the big stats, and again, they've, you know, the guys who made this happen aren't all there, but the rushing defense, for Texas, allowing 98 yards per game and 3 yards a carry. So can they muster something like that against Michigan in the Citrus Bowl?
Yeah, you know, Michigan essentially beat Alabama and Tampa last year without even a quarterback.
Yeah, they really did.
You know, I just trust Texas a little bit more in this spot. This is a little bit of a rematch too, isn't it? Didn't Texas go up to Ann Arbor?
Yeah,
with Quinn Ewers in the last year or so.
Yep.
And get the job done up there. So we get a rematch with the Wolverines uniform game, no doubt about it. I mean, helmet game.
No doubt.
The helmet meter is on elite for both of these teams. Kyle Whittingham going into Michigan. Mm-hmm. That's been a very interesting week for him.
Yeah.
Not going to coach Utah in his final game with the Utes. Instead, had to get to Orlando to kind of get that process going because the portal looms, Brent, as we both know. Let's move into the college football playoff quarterfinals. And we know we've got some intriguing matchups leading up to the doubleheader of SEC teams that are going to be participating on Thursday. We're going to have Ohio State, Miami in the Cotton Bowl tomorrow night. That should be it has potential anyway.
It does
to be a four quarter type of affair. And then early, this is weird to me. Texas Tech in Oregon playing in the Orange Bowl.
Yeah.
What about, remember when the halftime show at the Orange Bowl, if nothing else, you used to tune in to the damn Orange Bowl on New Year's night because the halftime show was so damn good.
Hey,
I mean, what's that halftime show going to be like at 1:30 Eastern on Thursday? You know, not going to be much of a light show, I would guess, down in South Florida.
No, and Trev, do you remember that halftime show lasted about an hour, didn't it? If you were playing, you could go in the locker room and have a nap during that time, couldn't you?
Yeah, the Super Bowl. There was a time, kids. Come sit on Uncle Travis's knee right here. I'm gonna story time with Uncle Trav.
Yeah.
There was a time when the Super Bowl halftime show wanted to be the Orange Bowl halftime show. Super Bowl halftime show grew up. Yeah. Now, I mean, it's a spectacle all of its own. The Super Bowl is concerned, but that's just weird to me. Noon kickoff for the Orange Bowl Oregon and Texas Tech. So we'll see, because that Texas Tech defense against that Oregon offense, the Oregon run game, can they do enough to help Dante Moore and not become one dimensional? But what we're going to be most interested in, obviously, is at 4 Eastern on Thursday, when the Alabama Crimson Tide, ninth in the college football playoff rankings, takes on the number one seed, the Hoosiers of Indiana. I told you, I've been traveling all day, Brent, from Milwaukee to Nashville to Northeast Florida. I have never seen so many Indiana football fans in my life. Boy, the IU people are in the airports and making their way west. Alabama, obviously, no stranger to Pasadena, going back really for almost the length of the Rose Bowl history. Alabama also going for its 1,000th win in program history. All that being said, boy, from the national perspective, Brent, it is all IU
in
terms of what's expected to take place at the Rose Bowl on Thursday afternoon.
Oh, yeah, and how much will that motivate Alabama? How much of that will they need it? And obviously with your work with Alabama, The obvious question here to me, Trav, is Bama's healthy for maybe the first time. You could certainly tell us once in September almost in a lot of ways. So they're close to all hands on deck, are they not?
They really are. And it kind of tells you when the hot takers nationally are pushing this blowout.
Yeah.
And Alabama's got no chance to win. And look, Indiana's legit, man.
Sure they are.
They are legit with a capital L. And the biggest problem, I think, for Alabama in this game is I don't see Indiana beating itself.
Yeah.
And I still think there are times where some of the undisciplined play for Alabama rears its ugly head. And if you do that against Indiana, they will make you pay
pretty
much time in and time out. Indiana, sort of like Iowa in that they don't really reinvent the wheel, but they are extremely balanced. They are dynamic enough. They're also getting healthier, including at the wide receiver position. They've got three or four guys that can absolutely go do it. And when I watch Indiana's receivers, I don't see, you know, 4-2 type of guys. They run well enough. Yeah, but contested catches, contested catches, they've got three guys that can all go get it. So, you know, it's so much more than Fernando Mendoza. I mean, there's no doubt about it. They got a couple of running backs that combined for 1,700 yards, 13 rushing touchdowns. But all that being said, the talent disparity or perceived disparity, and, you know, it's a very disciplined, detail-oriented Indiana team, and that's where Alabama is going to have to be at its very best, because a couple of busts or something like that on either side of the ball, or maybe a reversion to kicking game struggles that they didn't have against Oklahoma.
Right.
Then it could become the kind of game that the hot takers are talking about. But what the hot takers aren't taking into account is what you said. Alabama, from a health and availability perspective, is in as good a spot as it's been in a long time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And one thing I want to point out about Indiana, too, that not only do they have a dominant rushing attack, Trev, that defense averages basically 9 tackles for loss per game. Mm-hmm. So how important is it going to be for Alabama's offensive line to protect Ty Simpson and for Simpson to – and he's had a habit of doing this the entire season. Now, look, when he's on, he's as good as anybody in the country. But against this defense, Trav, if you're Simpson, you cannot hold the ball very long, can you?
No, you can't. But, you know, you got to help him out, too. I think early in the game, it's going to be on Ryan Grubb to get Ty Simpson going. You know, don't just stick him in the gun and ask him to make full field progression and, you know, hit the 18-yard dig route from the outset. I think get him under center, get him on the move maybe a little bit. That's what Indiana, I think, does well with Fernando Mendoza.
Sure.
You know, they make him hard to hit or hard to find at times. And so I think it's going to be on Ryan Grubb to help his quarterback, and having a healthier Josh Cuevas at tight end should do that. The running back situation is as good as it's been in a long time. Maybe Kevin Riley is well enough coming off that broken jaw that he can give Alabama something there. But ultimately, your stars have to be stars in games like this. Ty Simpson has to take care of the football, has to be very confident in himself. If he's still getting middle of the field coverage, they got to stay with the slot fades and the deep corners and those type of things outside the numbers, and then earn the right to be able to come back and work the middle of the field. And, it's on the Alabama offensive line. But big injury for Indiana in this game, too. Stephen Daly, 19 tackles for loss. He's going to be out. That obviously helps. But to the point we made about the Indiana offense, it's not just one guy on the defensive side. Now, you know, if you have to turn this into a thing where you're throwing it maybe even more than you want to, I do think Alabama's receivers against that Indiana secondary can do some good things, but that goes back to your offensive line, down in and down out. First and foremost, can they get the protections right? You know, can they identify the fronts and the looks and get the pressures right and the protection right? And that goes on Ty too, because sometimes there's just guys that you can't pick up, you know, and that's where Ty's got to, he's got to know his hot. He's got to know when to go and help his OL out too.
Yeah. Two or three quick things on this, Trav. Can Ryan Williams step up? I mean, he's made it clear he's coming back next year. It would behoove him to have a much better game that is going on here. Grubb, obviously. And I thought he made a good point, and I'm curious your take on this too. He said, we've really got to do something in the first quarter. We wasted way too many quarters and starting off in putting ourselves into a bind. So, Trev, I think that's two things. Can Ryan Williams step up and help Bama? certainly more than he has, and can they start the game better than they have in the last few?
Yeah, that's sort of been a 180 for them, because the first half of the season, you could almost put 7 points on the board.
Absolutely.
After or when Alabama was on script. Mm-hmm. And then once they got into the second half of the season, that started not to show up maybe as much. So quick start, obviously, would behoove Alabama offensively in this game. You know, and I think defensively is probably where Alabama's not going to be talked about enough going into this, even though it is a Heisman Trophy winner on the other side of the ball. But you have got to be sound in your stuff, because I've said it before about Indiana and Ohio State. When I watch them offensively, I see some 2009, 2010, 2011 kind of offenses. Not that they're outdated, but they're balanced, and they don't try to reinvent the wheel. And, boy, Cignetti's done a tremendous job.
He really has.
You know, so, you know, for Alabama, it's going to be imperative to be on your P's and Q's, because Indiana is built in a way in which they can really take advantage of situations. Sugar Bowl matchup later that evening, Brent. Ole Miss taking on the Georgia Bulldogs down at the Dome in the French Quarter, or at least bordering the French Quarter.
Yeah,
8 p.m. Eastern Thursday night, ESPN. Do you think Lane's got anything to do with this, this Ole Miss offense at this point? Or you really believe it's all Charlie Weiss and the staff members who are, by the way, going to head to LSU when this is all said and done? I think this game, Kewon Lacy for Ole Miss, he wasn't especially productive against Georgia the first time around. He did have a couple of touchdowns, but he's going to have something more than 48, 49 rushing yards.
Yes.
I just don't think you can put this all on Trinidad Chambliss for four quarters. I think we found that out in Athens. It was good for about three quarters, and then that fourth quarter, Georgia did the job.
Yeah, they really did. And look, I know they've been critical of the fans, some of the team, you know, a little bit of implied stuff from some of the coaching staff about Lane, but I think they will miss Lane in this game. And that's not criticizing Charlie White Jr. He's done a really good job. It's a shame that obviously that he will move on. But again, I mean, if you're looking for consistency in these playoffs, I mean, Trav, to me, it's Georgia on all sides of the ball, offense, defense, and special teams. In the game they played in October, Georgia 510 yards of total offense. Gunnar Stockton was one. I mean, he had a Heisman Trophy game against Ole Miss, 26 of 31 for 289 and four touchdowns. But again, as you said, I think Kewon Lacy, Trinidad Chambliss, or certainly Keys. And the important thing is, can Ole Miss take this game into the fourth quarter and have a real chance to be able to win?
Yeah, that is it, I think. And, you know, teams change from matchups one to two. And I think Trinidad Chambliss is probably playing even better. And he played great. For about three quarters in that first go around with Georgia, he was really good. Boy, the explosiveness for Ole Miss was a real problem. I think Georgia's back end is playing better than it did the first time around. Georgia's secondary was not good, in those games against, say, Alabama and Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. I think they've turned it up a little bit, a good bit, actually. And Georgia's just going to be a tough out, man. I know it was talked about on X today. You know, who's the favorite from this point forward? You know, with Indiana as the number one team, but Ohio State still in it and Georgia still in it. And, you know, I think Ohio State still has the best roster in this playoff, but I still lean toward Georgia being the tougher out of any team in this. You're just going to, you're going to have to knock them out. You know, you're going to have to beat Georgia. And it's not going to be an easy thing. I can't go against Georgia in this game either. I just have more trust in Kirby and the culture and the ability to hold up for all four quarters. Again, kind of like what we saw with this first matchup between these teams. I think it has the potential to be a really fun game. But Kirby's preference, obviously, is to make it boring as hell. kind of like he did the Alabama game. And what about what about the Ole Miss concerns about Lane already poaching the Ole Miss roster? You know, I mean, the Ole Miss NIL collective director Walker Jones come out to Ross Dellinger today or yesterday and say, you know, it's unfortunate what has been going on with our players and their former head coach and staff. Well, you've got staff still coaching this team that's going to Ole Miss. So, it's rough, Brent, right now with what we got going on around college football. But who do you like in this game? You like Georgia?
Oh, yeah. Look, I'm with you. I think it's going to be a good game. I mean, Ole Miss just has too many players. And look, they win or lose this game, and I think they'll lose. Ole Miss still has to realize – They've come a million miles, and they may have a million to go. But for them to be in the playoff, for them to be at this point, a win for them would be absolutely historic. But again, look, when you've got a situation with Kirby Smart and that Georgia coaching staff against, I know a lot of those Ole Miss guys are back, but again. You don't have Lane. I think he would have made a difference in this game.
Yeah. It's important for Georgia. No Drew Bobo again.
That's right. Game.
He's out at the center position. But Colby Young, it looks like at wide receiver, is going to be able to go against Ole Miss. And you add him to London Humphreys and Dylan Bell and Zach Branch, who has really just continued to come on and on. I think that bodes well for Georgia, even with Bobo. And the good thing for Georgia is, you know, they've had a good bit of time now to deal with that absence of Drew Bobo. And they got through the SEC championship game pretty okay without Drew Bobo. So that should have given them some confidence there at that critical spot.
And Trev, I gotta ask this. What about Will Muschamp going to Texas? A repeat performance for him, obviously in the as D coordinator this time. But I found that fascinating, frankly, and what, you know, basically sitting a year out and then getting the coveted job that he got there. I just found all that fascinating in many ways.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's movement at that coordinator level, man. Sark make a change there, and it looks like we've seen USC's playing right now, I think, in the Alamo Bowl against TCU. And, you know, it looks like the former Texas defensive coordinator is Mike going to be on his way to USC with Deonton Lynn headed from USC to Penn State.
Wow.
So it's not just players moving around right now in college football. So there you go, a college football preview involving the SEC team still around. A ceiling of two teams for the SEC that can press on to the semifinals. That's the max, obviously, with two of them playing in New Orleans and then Alabama out in Pasadena. Brent, you got anything else for us of note here before we get out of here on a Tuesday night?
Yeah, let me mention a couple things real quick. Travis has mentioned that Ohio State-Miami game. Boy, oh, boy. Trav, talking about two defenses, good night. And particularly the front seven for both these teams. It's just ferocious. Reuben Bain is eight people up the entire year. Ohio State's defense not allowing more than 16 points a game. That's going to be, I think, a very fascinating game. That would be a humongous win for Miami if they could win that game. But the other two things is we're always looking ahead. Man, you've got all this stuff going on, and then in just mere hours, we start the transfer portal again.
Oh, yeah, fired up.
You know, it's only going to be about a week or so, but I mean, that's going to be very interesting. And the other thing is that Travis and I will get into the powers to be your meeting coming up once we hit January, and we're about to do that about, you know, what do they do with the playoffs? Do they keep them at 12? Do they go to 16? So Trav, on and off the field, man, it's amazing what's happening.
Yeah, and I mean, already in the portal, you see Cam Coleman, the standout wide receiver for Auburn.
That's right.
Go ahead and make that move. Alex Golish is going to be very fascinating to see what his initial roster looks like. I've said it before, like when they had this SEC schedule reveal for 2026. I don't care. I want to see rosters. I mean, when I see rosters, then I'll look at the schedules. Hell, I still want to see coaching staffs.
Yeah.
For that matter. But, you know, Byron Brown, maybe the USF quarterback is the Auburn quarterback. Deuce Knight hits the portal.
Yeah.
Golish wants a very specific guy, kind of like the guy he used to work for in Heupel. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out on the plains. There's going to be more. That Miami, getting back to your point about Miami and Ohio State, boy, two of my favorite true freshmen in all of college football, Malachi Toney.
Oh, man.
Or give me 100 Malachi Toneys.
The little really
playmaker for Miami, who scored the winning touchdown against Texas A&M in the first round game in College Station. And then the running back, Bo Jackson, for Ohio State. Great name, might be an even better player. Not better than Vincent Bo Jackson, but a really, really good running back to watch. And you're right about the edge defenders, the playmakers on defense, Caleb Downs for Ohio State and then up front, and then the two edges, not just Reuben Bain, but they've got two.
They've got
two that can wreck the game. So, boy, it's going to be imperative. Fletcher, the running back for Miami, can he have the sort of success that he had against Texas A&M, take more of the game off of the quarterback position there at Miami, as we know, from time to time. That can be a little bit shaky. And as Julian Sayin, is he ready to sort of take that next step? Because I think Julian Sayin went through this season pretty much in a vacuum. I mean, he really wasn't pressed in that Ohio State offense and with that Ohio State team. That was the case a little bit more against Indiana, and the results kind of were what they were. You know, can Miami put him in a similar position on tomorrow night at Jerry World? Brent, anything else before we
just a quick run through. Florida's got a lot of guys staying and a lot of guys leaving. With Brunell Brown, the third, will come back. Jaden Woods is going to enter the portal. DeJohn Johnson is coming back. Eugene Trey Wilson, who's a really good wide receiver, is entering the portal. Now, the thing we need to make people aware of is just because you enter the portal doesn't mean you're gone, but it is significant with the moves that Auburn is going through. LSU lost a difficult game to Houston. Boy, this
and its whole offensive line, it sounds like.
Hey, Tramp, you're not kidding, are you? It literally
tackle to tackle.
Absolutely. Oh yeah. Now again, with Lane there, I think they'll be okay. And they'll be going again, which would be interesting. And oh, by the way, lest we forget, Mississippi State, Wake Forest,
Duke's Mayo Bowl.
Yeah, absolutely. So give State credit for still being alive. Look,
for accepting a bowl bid.
Yeah,
at 5-7, because so many teams did not want to make that trip to Charlotte. Apparently,
no. But you know, for Travis, for a team like that, they need to play, do they not?
They need to practice. They need to play.
Yes.
Absolutely. Jeff Lebby, I think, was more than happy to take that spot there in Charlotte.
Trev, were you surprised as we wind down here, South Carolina, Nick Harbor's coming back, Lenore Sellers at quarterback's coming back, also Nick Harbor and defensive end. Rashad Faison, the running back, is leaving, but that's three guys to build around. But as you and I both know, that's been the problem at South Carolina. They've had a handful of stars that they haven't had a lot of guys around them as a problem.
Maybe the addition of Kendall Briles was enough to convince Lenore Sellers to hang around. You know, Clemson just made a change at offensive coordinator with Lincoln Riley's brother out of there. That sort of coordinator and Browse, they kind of remind me of each other.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got DNA. They've sort of got this legacy about them between the Riley and the Briles. We'll see. Mm-hmm. I mean, regardless, Lenore Sellers to me needed at least another year in college. He might need two.
Yeah.
And with the money being what it is, it could hardly be the worst thing for him. He definitely needs another year.
Sure.
Because he is very far away in terms of projectability to me, in terms of what the NFL still holds sacred in a lot of ways where the quarterback position is concerned.
Yeah, no doubt. Trav, always enjoy it, bud. Glad you're back in warmer weather, although it may not feel like it tonight. But I'm glad the family's okay. Ours is too. And, boy, we've got a lot of action coming up over the next few days.
We absolutely do. Fun time of year. We'll be back right here on Ryer on YouTube to recap it all on Second Helping. If you haven't subscribed to Ryer on YouTube, go ahead and hit that subscribe button right now. Hit that notification bell. That way you're alerted to all of our content as it drops right here on Ryer on YouTube. Hit us with a thumbs up if you don't mind. That would help us out tremendously as well. Have a safe and joyous entrance into 2026. Okay, folks? Do that for Brent and myself.
That's right.
Have a lot of fun. But please be safe out there. Mm-hmm. So we want to see you back here on Second Helping as we enter the new year. For Brent Beard, I'm Travis Schreier. Thanks again for joining us right here on Ryer on YouTube. And until next time, Happy New Year.